The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Hello, gay snakes and falsies. Have a bounce on this as we bring you today the real Mackay. Selhurst Park moves Scupper after alleged racist, sexist, snakist messages. Scupper role at Palace. Worrying news that for Prince Philip. Elsewhere, there's tears at Old Trafford as the nanny leaves, but Marcus Rojo arrives. Hot ask though, who's slower at making signings? Is it Man United or Stephen Hawking on a book tour? There's midweek action reviewed, including Besiktas Arsenal, and we ran out the weekend's Premier League fixtures too, including Man City Liverpool, rivals of course for this year's runners-up spot behind Chelsea, who've beaten the newly promoted side now and thus are clearly going to walk the title. All of that then coming up in today's Football Weekly Extra. Boom! Today's Football Weekly Extra features the vocal talents of Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Paul McInnes.
Hello.
And Barry Glendening.
Hello.
How are you doing, Barry? Lovely to see you again.
Oh, thanks. Nice to be back.
Excellent. Excellent. What have you been doing? I know there was women's rugby in Paris.
Yes. That was good fun. Nice
right.
day out.
Mm-hmm.
Except the result wasn't great. England hammered Ireland. So.
Oh.
In the semi-final. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. Never seen women's rugby before.
Right. What did you take away from that?
It's much the same as men's rugby,
right.
except not quite as quick or as brutal, I suppose.
Really?
But yeah, it was entertaining.
A gentler game.
I wouldn't say it's gentle. It's just more gentle.
Right.
Than,
okay.
Than men's
you could
rugby.
Use the word gentler, but
yeah, sorry.
It's up to you. And then Monday. Explain your absence on Monday.
Monday, I was out at Sky.
No.
Sky HQ
really?
Doing a very exciting thing for the Observer this Sunday.
Ooh.
I was behind the scenes on Monday Night Football with Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, and Ed Chamberlain.
Wow. So you can reveal all sorts of scenes of vicious infighting.
No, sadly, they all get on really well. Mm. The two boys are incredibly enthusiastic about their job. And, you can read all about it in The Observer.
Yeah, but throw us a little tidbit. Something that we can find out more about in Sunday's Observer.
It's funny. Like, they start at 9 a.m.
Right.
Well, ostensibly, they start on Saturday lunchtime. They start exchanging texts about what they can talk about. Not racially offensive or anti-snake texts, but just tactically based texts, and then they pitch up at Sky HQ at 9 o'clock in the morning for a day's work that doesn't finish till 5 to 11.
Wow.
So they work really, really hard, and they take it very seriously, but it looks like a lot of fun. And watching them watch football, I was lucky enough to get to sit and watch the second half of Burnley-Chelsea with
right.
the three of them, and watching the two lads watch football is quite an education.
Right.
I watched the second half of Burnley-Chelsea in the public bar of a hotel in Inchua, a small village outside of Dundee, and you could barely make out the figures moving on the screen.
Really? Really? To be fair, it was the wrong half to watch of Burnley-Chelsea because all the action had happened in the first 45 minutes, and it saw Chelsea lay down, according to pretty much everyone's accounts, a real marker for this year's title. Everyone's saying that they are the team. Here's, Alex Brown tweeting in saying, are Chelsea the only team in the league without a single weak spot in their starting 11? I think particularly impressive was the way that the three new guys seamlessly slotted into their lineup. The three new guys being, of course, Fabregas, Diego Costa. Fabregas looked particularly good. And him,
Thibaut
Courtois.
Yes, Mourinho talking after the game about he likes to kind of have mind games with his current rivals, but he also likes to do it with his previous rivals as well.
Ooh.
Suggesting that Barcelona hadn't made good use of him. But he did look like closer to the position that he played for Arsenal
right.
and closer to the player he was for Arsenal.
So it's fair that it wasn't that Cesc had gone off the boil, he just wasn't being used properly.
Well, I think you could also argue that the La Liga is a more technical league and therefore it's more difficult to shine. He gets more time. Or his technique is a bit higher up in the Premier League and then to shines a little bit more.
That first time ball, though, through to Andreas Schürrle, though, for the second Chelsea goal, pretty red hot.
That was delightful. He was the one who, along with Costa, those two seemed to slot in immediately.
All right. Well, Well, everyone's gone a bit doolally over Chelsea, you know, with Mou now saying positive things and the fact they've got goal scorers up front and that, having beaten a newly promoted side. If they go and beat two newly promoted sides in a row, we can pretty much declare the season over, Jacob. And they have the opportunity to do that this weekend against Leicester.
Yeah, well, I guess it's the kind of game the reason why they lost the league last season. They struggled in that kind of game at home. They drew with Norwich at home. They lost to Sunderland. They drew with West Ham.
West Brom as well, no?
West Brom, which, you know, the last minute penalty, which shouldn't have been. And so this is probably where, more so than against Burnley, where you're looking for the likes of Fabregas and Costa to make a difference, because they were pretty good away from home last season. It was more when they had to take teams apart at home that they tended to struggle a bit more.
And I think that's where the question might lie. I mean, you watch that game on Monday and I do think you think that they are favourites. They just looked so powerful. But it's in that three behind the front man that's the question, I think, about how much Oscar, Hazard, Schürrle, Willian are going to input in terms of chances and goals.
To go back to Alex Brown's tweet, are they the only team in the league without a single weak spot in the starting 11? Do they not have anything?
I would say Manchester City probably are not too far behind them. I think the league will be a straight up contest between those two. I think there's a huge gulf in class between them and everyone else.
All right, huge game coming up on Monday, of course. You won't be there. Have you been invited back for this Monday?
Sadly, no.
Oh, all right. Mm. You could always come and do a behind the scenes at the BT's European Football Show, where you would be treated to scenes of vicious infighting.
Across the table, tennis table?
Yeah.
You can watch someone doing a minute by minute if you want.
Plenty of options, Barry. Oh, Leicester, they earned that late draw against Everton, which is impressive, and they're certainly looking to beef up their squad still further for the challenge ahead, for the season ahead. A lot of talk about Esteban Cambiaso.
How old is he?
He's pretty old now. Pretty old now. But still, a lot of experience.
Yeah.
But sadly, no Rod Fanny, because that would have been fun. We were talking about our favourite names. I'm surprised Rod Fanny didn't come up, actually.
But they do have Daniel Drinkwater.
Right, okay.
He's out, I think, for Monday. I think he's thirsty. I heard you talking about good football. Danny Invincible, that's one of my favourites.
That's an excellent one.
And Waldo Ponce, who, to be fair, is Chilean. I think it's Waldo Ponce, but...
Right,
you
but
know,
that's almost...
Let's overlook that.
Yeah. Rod Fanny, who comes supposedly, and I have this from a former teammate of his, with the middle name Dodgy. Supposedly. But anyway, a great loss to the world of English football. Reporting. Paul, you got a favourite player's name?
Well, I thought there was one, and I ended up with three. And I don't think any of them are Champions League.
Oh.
But one of them, I really liked Sofiane Fagouli from Algeria because it always made me pronounce it like Donnie Brasco.
Right,
that film. Stefan Grosskreutz, which if you translate it means Stephen Big Crucifix, which I think is quite nice.
Or Cross.
Or Cross, if you're going to be, specific about it. And then my favourite of all is, sadly, he was never a professional footballer, but he is associated with the game. He's Fox, Latin America's chief sports commentator. And he's called Diego Fox, and spelt the right way and everything. And he's like a full-on macho beast, and he just gives it so much shouting and roaring and everything that you just think, you know, Diego Fox by name, Fox by nature.
Right, okay. Who does he work for?
Fox.
Right.
Fox for Fox.
Right, brilliant.
I think my favourite athlete name of all time is the, Kazakh. The Tashkent Terror.
Oh.
Jamaluddin Abdujaparov.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of pleasure to be had in savouring those syllables. Jacob?
Kenny Lunt.
Why?
Well, he switched the first two.
Yeah, but all right. Okay, anyway, we'd best get on because there's loads of other things to talk about, not least Manchester City against Liverpool. But Crystal Palace, that's all over Thursday morning's papers on account of the fact that Wednesday had them set up to sign Marky Mackay to reunite him with his former associate Ian Moody. They were both at Cardiff together. But as you probably read everywhere, a flurry of texts that Cardiff, I presume it's Cardiff who've revealed this.
Vincent Tan, having accepted a grovelling apology from Malky during the summer, was it?
Well, I think, but yeah.
Has now proceeded to shaft him anyway by So it basically took legal action. Lawyers got warrants to take computer equipment and phones from Moody and Mackay, and then found these...
This was back in March, I think. Text messages.
Yeah, but this, I think the dossier of revenge has just been submitted to FAHQ now.
Were they not right up against the deadline or something? There was like 2 days left to submit it or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And they just...
So, and yeah, Matt Lawton at the Daily Mail has sort of got the exclusive...
Right, and it is absolutely shocking stuff, or whatever, Cardiff's motives, or maybe in doing it, and they do seem to have some substantial investigations going on against this pair.
Well, there are also investigations into various transfer dealings,
right.
But the nitty-gritty hasn't been released into the public domain, so, I mean, you can kind of read between the lines and figure out what the problem is, but you can't say it, obviously.
Right.
The suspicion about the transfer dealings appears to have been the origin of the inquiry, yeah.
Mm. But the text on their own would render
well, there's quite a breathtaking range of bigotry on show. It's like racist, homophobic.
Sadly, the job at the Italian FA is already gone. Otherwise, he'd be a perfect fit for that.
Jacob was saying earlier he might get a job at FIFA.
Yes, you know, Sepp just sort of looking at him and thinking, oh, you know, I quite like this, the cut of his jib.
A few handshakes later, and it's all sorted. Sorry, you were saying there, Paul.
I don't think I was, but
well, you're not.
But I mean, it makes Richard Scudamore look a little bit better by some way of consolation.
Well, the storm's already led to Ian Moody resigning from his position at Crystal Palace. So they not only need signings, but they need a new man to make them as well. But what are Palace going to do? Because I mean, the immediate issue for them
is they don't have a manager.
Yeah,
yeah.
Apparently, Tim Sherwood's now pulled himself out of the race because he was passed over.
Well, yeah,
in the first place
they were. Sort of not too willing to bring his coaching staff, Chris Ramsey and Les Ferdinand, on board, and because they've already got coaches there, such as Keith Millen, who will be in charge for Saturday's game. And I think Glenn Hoddle said he doesn't want the job, which...
He didn't even want to have talks about talks.
Yeah.
Really?
They're kind of they're down to the bare bones on their shortlist.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when you look at West Brom as well, I think in my club as well, we struggled to make a. We were all looking around the same pool of managerial possibilities.
Your former chap Chris Houghton was mentioned, was linked with the Crystal Palace job.
Well, I mean, he might come back on the radar again.
There's others like Steve Clarke, Di Matteo, I suppose, both former West Brom guys. Neil Lennon.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Lennon appears to be. You know, they all appear to be looking for work, but none of them have been given jobs, which. There's been at least four or five vacancies in the Premier League over the past 6 months, which suggests either there are more issues with each candidate than we know, or that people are holding out for better, perhaps more continental options, which they never quite find either.
Well, Palace took a long time to appoint Pulis last season. You know, initially he didn't want the job, and I think you know it was Holloway left in October, Pulis. First game was at the beginning of December, so that's a long time they went without a manager.
Yeah, four games they had Keith Millen, and they got a win and a draw and two defeats, but
they're okay, but it was just a long time to go without
one.
They seem to have a problem of attracting.
Right.
There are certain, and you know, the disagreement with Pulis or whatever, you know, no one's quite sure exactly what's gone on, but you know, it seems to make it difficult for Palace to recruit at the moment.
And
Steve Parrish actually gave Max Rushton and I the Palace job for one game last season.
That's true. How did that go for you, Barry?
We won. We beat Hull.
Right.
And neither of us bothered turning up. We didn't pick the team.
Mm-hmm.
We'd give no input whatsoever, and we still won the game.
Brilliant. Okay.
So we have 100% Premier League management record.
They're obviously keen to resolve this issue because there's not long to go in the transfer window, and generally you'd associate a new manager coming in with one or two signings. But hey, what about them signing Big Sam after he gets fired by Hammers because he loses to Crystal Palace this weekend? How's that for a scenario? That would be a good fit, wouldn't it?
And he's the sort of player who can work on, a sort of manager who can work on limited transfer budgets, which appears to be the problem with a lot of these clubs.
There you go.
Is there an argument, and I think it's a lame one, but I've seen a few people try to make it, that
Malcolm Mackay, lame argument.
old friend. that Mackay and Moody's texts, for all their offensiveness, were sort of a private conversation between two blokes. I mean, what can they actually be charged with?
Well, nothing. It just damages their reputation.
Oh, of course it does, yeah. Mm. I'm not excused.
I don't think the criminal charges will relate to that. I think that the investigation, as Paul was saying, is more about stuff that went on in that £50 million spending spree.
Yeah.
Mm.
They were also very hard on snakes. I've been studying, you know, the gay snake thing.
Oh, yeah.
Snakes don't actually demonstrate homosexual behaviour. But there was a study in Manitoba in Canada some time ago where the red-sided garter snake,
right.
Scientists implanted a male with estrogen capsules.
Oh, yeah.
And after a while, that male was swarmed by other males.
Really?
Who attempted to defile it in a very unpleasant way.
Those Shawshank Redemption-esque scenes.
Yes, yes.
You can get snakes that have sex with themselves, can't you?
That, I didn't get.
Maybe that's
that
worms.
That might be worms. It's a different.
They look very similar.
Worms and snakes. Mm-hmm. But the snake in general, when a lady snake and a daddy snake, when they get together,
fall in love.
How does that work, snake. Barry? In this study, do they go into that at all?
Well, snake sex. With the garter snakes, yeah. the females, sort of stronger, older, more experienced.
Right.
Females, like, you know, the older the fiddle, the sweeter the tune. They're more popular with the male snakes, who basically, like, loads of male snakes will swarm around one. And again, it's Shawshank Redemption.
And they just kind of slid.
And then when the female snakes had enough,
right,
she sated, she stops giving off this estrogen hormone thing, yep. and it's sort of a signal, right, leave me alone, right. Move along to the next lady snake.
Wow.
So I was up in the Edinburgh Festival watching some comedy at the
Is
weekend.
Is this snake related?
It's sex related.
Okay, cool. Yep.
So there's a comedian, Sarah Pascoe. She's very funny. She's been nominated for the Comedy Award. If you're up in Edinburgh, go and see her. And her stuff is all about female sexuality.
Oh, right.
And she says that there's been recent new research into female sexual desire, which says that that women are generally louder than men in sex. And there's a kind of an evolutionary reason for this.
What is the evolutionary reason?
That it used to be a signal to other men in the village that they were sexually active and available. So a woman would shout and make a lot of noise. And then, you know, one partner would be spent, he'd bugger off and they'd get another one.
And what was the punchline?
It's just fact.
Oh, right. Okay.
Science fact.
Tell you what, this has been quite an adult edition so far of Weekly Extra. Or should I say Sextra?
Yay.
Yay. Palace, West Ham. We'll just end up with a little prediction then. Palace, West Ham.
Palace will win.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll go for Palace.
All right.
Palace too.
Palace it is then. All right, that's more than enough for part one. We'll be back with a look at Arsenal and their European exploits after this.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to take 10% off.
I'll tell you what, Barry, if you had fun saying, what's his first name?
Jamaluddin
Abdujaparov.
Yep.
Yeah. Just think how much enjoyment saying a fear of snakes in Latin will give you when I reveal to you that it is ophidiophobia.
So fear of gay snakes would be homophidiophobia.
Wow. Can you get that in 140 characters?
Don't know.
All right. Now... if you want to hear bon mots like this from Barry and myself in a live environment, then mark out Thursday, September the 4th for yourselves, when we will be at the Manchester Football Writing Festival, ironically enough. It's all taking place at the Royal Northern College of Music, and we're going to be joined on stage by Ian McIntosh and James Horncastle on Thursday, September the 4th. There's still a few tickets available. I'm a little bit upset about that. I don't know how big and cavernous a location this is, but...
There was a waiting list in Dublin.
Yeah.
With 200 people on it.
It's not a football town, though, Manchester.
That's, nah.
That's probably the issue. There's a link to the box office on our blog, which I presume Ben intends to mean the kind of Football Weekly homepage.
Hmm. Well, we're plugging events.
Yeah.
I've got an event.
Go on, then.
So I edit this magazine, The Guide.
The Guide, and available every Saturday.
Every Saturday, and we're going live in Dalston, which is, you know, a natural, a spiritual home, in East London. And
is it in the Guardian's coffee shop?
No, it's about a mile away from the coffee shop, so you could go and pick up a coffee and then wander.
Does it still exist, the Guardian's coffee shop?
It does.
Does it? No way.
Yeah, I play football there on a Sunday, and it's always busy.
Coffee shop.
Well, just round the back, it's in that horrible box park thing.
Oh yeah,
which is a kind of shipping container shopping mall.
Right. I love bit of Dalston chat.
What kind of people go to the Guardian coffee shop?
People who like to use iPads that are locked in, so you can't steal. You get free iPad use. Okay. There is a lot of people who kind of like think that the Guardian's quite cool.
Right.
And they like to go and sit there and pay them for the most expensive coffee in Britain.
Really?
Yeah, is the coffee good?
No.
Oh. Really?
And, and a bottle of water costs £2.50.
Paul, you're a little bit off message on that.
It does pay Jimbo's wages, which is another reason I'm slagging it off.
But all right.
So anyway, what's your event?
And a mile up the road in the Rotorino restaurant, there'll be a guide brunch with Josie Long, the comedian. She'll be doing a bit. The Two Bears.
Does she do sexuality stuff or what?
I could ask. Okay. I mean, she might even do requests.
No, she's a little bit put off by the...
Huh?
Isn't she gone all political?
No, she's love now. She's moved from politics to love.
Oh, right. That's a nice thing.
Is she actually funny? I've never seen her do stand-up.
Yeah, she's hilarious. No, she's genuinely hilarious. And she's got funny bands.
You can find out for yourself. With the
not for 40 quid.
Is that what it's 40 quid?
Listen, we don't mention the price of your tickets. Yeah, okay, 40 quid. But you get a brunch, you get a cocktail, you get stand-up comedy, you get music, and you get me talking to the Two Bears.
You'll be performing?
I'll be interviewing.
The Two Bears being Hot Chip.
Hot Chips, Joe Goddard and his mate, and they make kind of like riotous house music.
Or as you described it before.
No, I didn't.
Okay. moving right along then.
Maybe it was me who described it.
Now, listeners, you came...
House music for people who don't like house music?
I don't think that was the word at all. You came in search of football chat, listener, and here's a bit for you. Everton are facing Arsenal at the Saturday tea time game. That sounds a cracking matchup, doesn't it, at Goodison Park?
Yeah, it was a traumatic defeat for Arsenal last season at Goodison Park.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it was.
2-0. 3-0 to Everton.
Was it 3-0?
Yeah.
It kind of put the nails in their
title. That was the
coffin.
Thing.
Well, that's when it seemed... I remember watching that game and with mate, and we're sort of looking at each other and saying, God, is Wenger actually going to go after, you know?
Wow.
Because Arsenal looked so bad in that game. And Everton went fourth above them. And then, you know, they got it back and Everton kind of fell away a little bit, didn't they? After that, they couldn't sustain it and Arsenal had their traditional late surge to finish in the top four. But, they're coming into it. They look like quite tired, Arsenal.
Mm.
I think it's a problem for a lot of clubs, the fact that the World Cup just basically finished a few weeks ago and a lot of their players don't look, certainly the big sides, don't look ready yet.
Right.
They're expected to welcome back their German contingent on Saturday, the Ozil, Mertesacker and Podolski. And Everton have lost Ross Barkley indefinitely, possibly for 4 or 5 months.
Initial reports talked about a period of that length, but I saw that Martinez yesterday was suggesting that it was going to be a lot sooner that he might be available again, maybe 8 weeks or so.
Okay, right.
But confusion reigns in a very real sense about the midfielder's physical condition. They were held to a late draw by Leicester at the weekend, while Arsenal took a very late goal from Ramsey, who got his first ever red card midweek. He's got a late goal against Crystal Palace. But then against Besiktas, Tuesday night, they're away in Istanbul, 0-0, and they were lucky to get away with a 0-0, I think, weren't they?
Demba Ba should have scored at least one, and 0-0 is a decent result, you know.
We had a few half chances for Arsenal.
All right, I was busy watching the Napoli game, but I did see the highlights. Loads
of stuff, but the Arsenal Besiktas, wasn't particularly entertaining. I would be happy with a 0-0 draw in that game, you know.
Right, okay. Arteta got injured, so he'll presumably be missing again, and for the second leg, which I think is coming up early next week, is it?
Yeah,
or Wednesday next week.
Yeah.
Wednesday next week. So, but that's kind of, I think, what was expected. Arsenal to scrape through the away leg and then tie it up back at home.
Yeah, I mean, 0-0 can sometimes be a tricky result to play with when you go back home, you know, one away goal, you know, slip, whatever, but you would expect them to go and win that game now.
Right.
Wenger says he wants a defensive midfielder.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, although Chelsea have apparently been sniffing around this William Carvalho guy as well.
Of Sporting Lisbon.
Yeah, given their history of gazumping transfers, you wouldn't put it past them, would you?
Right. Well, Sami Khedira, the player that a lot of people are interested in, of that ilk, but Bayern Munich seem to be heading towards him at the moment. Transfer
would it be
window.
Worth taking a punt on Wilshire
For Arsenal?
As in moving him back.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what they're doing already a little
because
bit.
Because I don't see his future as a rampier. He just seems to have... His development has been completely arrested. Must have been that cigarette he smoked on
his
holidays.
Very possibly. A lot of people, though, make the point that he and Ramsey are of a similar age, and Ramsey himself had a season where everyone was declaring him a complete bust. And
just the season before last, in fact.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe it is... Yeah, there's still plenty of time for Jack Wilshere to come good.
Yeah, and I think if you compare this season to last season, Arsenal started with a home match. They lost against Aston Villa, so this one they ground out a 2-1 win against a fairly resolute Palace.
Mm-hmm.
There's still reasons to be optimistic. I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Alexis Sanchez over time. I think that's the big question.
Right.
Because they're going to need a lot of goals.
Right.
They're going to need a lot of goals, not just from Giroud. And they're going to need more from Giroud than last season if they are going to compete. And I think Sanchez is their best bet of that at the moment, with World Cup being out.
They need them for Giroud in the big games because he scored 22 goals last season, but against the big teams, he doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a game where, you know, you need them to turn up.
How do you rate their chances at Goodison?
It's hard.
Mm.
Everton are really good, especially at home.
Yeah. I mentioned the Napoli game. There's sure plenty of people have been watching that. Terrible performance from Napoli, but having said that, it was a terrible performance in which they had about 6 or 7 really good goal scoring chances, because they started really well and then completely lost the plot for about 70 minutes, and then after Higuain scored a completely impossible goal, then proceeded to have 6 or 7 absolutely blinding chances, some great saves from the athletic club
of Bilbao,
keeper, but also a couple of glaring misses, one from Callejon, but also Michu, pretty much on his first touch, found himself alone in front of goal and just squared the ball instead of having a pop.
How will Bilbao, because Munayin scored, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He was one of Europe's hottest properties 2 years ago. How's he doing?
They looked quite cautious to begin with, but then once they realised that Napoli were really a bit rubbish at the back, they started to really go for it and bossed the game for about 60, 70 minutes or so. But then at the end, they kind of panicked themselves a bit. But yeah, he looked good. It was a good goal.
Yeah.
Very, very coolly slotted away. 1-1, and you'd favour Athletic Club to go through at that point. All sorts of other excitements elsewhere, as Copenhagen got beaten 3-2 at home to Bayer Leverkusen. Leverkusen looked like a hot side to follow, friends, in Europe potentially this year, and certainly in Germany as well. They begin their Bundesliga campaign this weekend. Ooh, they're away at Borussia Dortmund.
Who's the manager now?
Roger Schmidt. He came from Red Bull Salzburg, apparently.
He did, who've had an interesting week on account of they got compared to Hitler in the Swedish press. Newspapers. Anyway, they've also got loads of really good players like Josip Dermich.
I was in Germany on Tuesday.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it all comes full circle. What were you doing there, Jacob?
Bayern Munich.
When they unveiled their bus,
no.
Wasn't that event?
No.
They unveiled their new team bus. That's a first, isn't it?
No. I was in the stadium, saw them putting up all the sponsors for tomorrow night, playing Wolfsburg, who are also meant to be quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that on some channel?
It is on a channel.
Yeah.
And just went out to see the empty stadium getting ready?
No, some sponsors event or something.
Oh, right. Did you get to speak to some...
Yeah, a little bit. But
who is this all embargoed or something?
Yeah. But they also seem a little bit annoyed that the World Cup is, you know, just finished and they've got to go and play a game of football now.
Yeah.
Seems like if you want to play Bayern now, there's now the time to do it.
Well, absolutely. They lost 2-0 in the Super Cup, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in Hamburg at a wedding a couple of weeks ago and I went to the hipster heaven that is the St. Pauli club shop.
Right, there you go. What did you bring back?
Several t-shirts, a beanie hat, and I didn't spend €38 on a snow shovel, but I could have.
You could
branded have. Snow shovel.
I was in Berlin the other week to interview the director Anton Corbijn, and I picked up about five different types of Haribo, including Smurf flavour.
Really? Smurf flavour? Mm. And is that only available in the German market?
Well, they're called like Smurfies or something like that.
Smurf flavour.
Yeah, well, not really. They're great.
They're
great.
Shaped as
they're great.
Smurfs.
They're made to Smurfs. Colour like Smurfs, but they taste the grapefruit.
That's amazing. Mm. Also, the fact, what were we talking to Anton Corbijn about? He's the Dutch director who excited so many of us back in the 80s with his terrific promotional pieces for Depeche Mode, and also videos like The Killing Moon for Ecken the Bunnyman. He was a real pioneer of the old All a Bit Dark, and I know it's pop, but actually I'm quite serious and bitter here.
Joshua Tree photo shoot as well for U2.
Yeah.
And he still manages U2's image 20-odd years later.
Really?
So that's like he's got these little sort of portfolio sidelines, which includes, you know, picking up presumably massive checks for doing the odd photo for U2.
Right.
But he's just made this film...
Because he did the
Control,
the New Order one, didn't he? Control,
he did,
yeah.
And his new film is called The Most Wanted Man, and it's a John le Carré story. It's really good. It's about
the film.
It's about Al Qaeda sort of potential in Hamburg.
Oh, right.
And it stars Philip Seymour Hoffman in his last role.
In his last role,
yeah, and he's amazing in it. Let me tell you right now.
All right, what's that film called again?
A Most Wanted Man, coming to cinemas September 12th or something like that.
Brilliant. Okay. Right, we've done Germany news, we've done film news. Next up, it's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Sid Lowe, back in Spain.
Yeah, I've had a run of games this week. It started at Tynecastle with the Edinburgh Derby. It was very good fun.
Yeah, normal services resumed that. You were off doing a book tour, weren't you, Sid?
Well, I don't know if you can call it a tour. It was only one date. But yes, I suppose I was.
All right. And then you caught some fit bar while you were north of the border.
Yeah, and Hearts have a kid called Sam Nicholson who looks very tasty indeed.
All right. Okay. After you saw that game, you went back to Spain. And then what happened, Sid?
Obviously, Barcelona played on Monday night in their traditional pre-season friendly, the Joan Gamper Trophy, which they won, was it 5-0 or 6-0? I've lost count. 6-0, I think it was
6-0.
Now. 6-0. Against Leon from Mexico. And then the following night at the Bernabeu for Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid in the first leg of the Supercopa, which finished 1-1, and the second leg's on Friday. And the season starts, was going to start on Friday, but because of the Supercopa it doesn't, it all starts on Saturday. Madrid and Atletico's games are held back till Monday.
Right, okay. You mentioned Barcelona. Obviously, they've been in the news a little bit. Luis Suarez coming on in that friendly, which was a bit of a shock.
Well, no, not really, because once the Court of Arbitration in Sport had ruled that the ban applied only to competitive games, then they knew that was going to happen, then they immediately...
Well, yeah, that was the shock that I was implying, though, the fact that part of the ban was reversed.
No, I don't think that was a shock
not
at all.
A shock.
To be
okay.
No, I mean, I think I said this to you at the time that I expected the Court of Arbitration in Sport to probably uphold the number of games and the 4-month ban and so on, maybe reduce it a little bit, but probably uphold it. But the key really was that application of the ban to things like training and other supposedly football related activities, which was a bit bizarre, really, that those things were not allowed to do. I must admit, the friendlies thing is possibly a bit more surprising, but I wasn't hugely shocked by that.
Okay, well, the other legal thing going on for Barcelona right now is their transfer ban, which FIFA has rejected their appeal. They're going to appeal that rejection. Looks like when this window shuts, they can't sign anyone till what, January 2016. Mm. But have they answered the glaring holes in their team from last year?
Well, that's a difficult one. I think they sort of have. Mm. I know that's a terrible answer to it, they sort of have. Despite all the suggestions to the contrary, I actually think Luis Suarez is probably quite a good signing for them. And I know it's, you know, naturally, you don't look at the forward line and go, that's where Barcelona really need a player. But I think he actually might be really quite good for them. I think Rakitic is a very good player midfield. The screaming thing that we've talked about for a long time, obviously, was the centre-backs. Now, there's been, obviously, Vermaelen's injured at the moment. And I must confess, I've not seen enough of him at Arsenal to know anything like as much as you lot will. But at least he's a centre-back. The other one is Jeremy Mateo, who's been criticised a bit in Spain because we're talking about a guy, I think he's 30 or 31, who cost 20 million euros, and that's quite expensive. But I actually think he's quite a good player, and I think he might well be what they needed. I'd quite like to see him at left-back with two centre-backs alongside him, to be honest. But I think he's quite good. The question mark now becomes... that because they've done this thinking there might be a ban but not sure that there is, and there now is a ban, and they're going to have to wait that little bit longer before they can sign again, the idea of signing a slightly older defender starts to look more questionable even than it already was. I think the signings haven't been bad, though.
All right. Atletico Madrid, how have they been left by the transfer market? Are they going to be as competitive this time around with the big two?
Well, funnily enough, I'm writing about Atletico now for Saturday morning's big paper, I think. And the The initial reaction, and I must admit, I was kind of part of this as well, or at least I felt the same way. Their initial reaction was that they won the league brilliantly. A week later, they lose the European Cup final in a way that almost sums up this kind of jinxed one history of theirs with, you know, a minute to go. And then the deconstruction of their team starts. Costa, Courtois, Felipe Luis all going to Chelsea. Thiago left, but then came back again. Who else went? Someone else went. Whose name? David Villa, of course, went. So in other words, their top two goal scorers went. Their goalkeeper went, who personally I think is brilliant, by the way. I think Chelsea fans, even if they're worried about Cech, will enjoy watching him play this year. And it felt like this is it. This is inevitable. The inevitable prize you get for taking on the big two in Spain is that people pick off your best players and it all starts to collapse. But actually, they've completely turned this situation round, and they've signed nearly 100 million euros worth of players, 95 million euros, which puts them not that far behind Real Madrid. I think only 20 million behind. They signed Antoine Griezmann, who I thought was is a really good signing. Griezmann, Oblak, Jimenez, Siqueira, Correa, Moya, Gámez, of course, Mario Mandzukic. He's a big one from Bayern Munich. And actually, they've looked quite good in preseason. They've only conceded one goal. It looks like it may work. It looks like there's even half a chance they could be stronger than last year. Hmm? Now, I'm reluctant to go that far, but they could be. Now, does that mean they'll win the league? Probably not, because the other two have reinforced enormously as well. But they'll certainly be a good side again this year. And while it may well be that they're not good enough to be better than Madrid or Barcelona, I think there's very, very little doubt that they're good enough to be better than the whole of the rest of Spain. And that means that they should pick up enough points to, at the very least, push Barcelona a good chunk of the season. Maybe not all the way, but a good chunk of the season, yeah.
Sid Lowe, back in Spain. Hey, Barry.
Yes, hello.
In European news, you were all over that Maribor Celtic game.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Finished 1-1. Ah. Two sides went about their work very meekly. I thought Maribor were the home side, but sat back and let Celtic come at them. But Celtic weren't, obviously, understandably reluctant to throw caution to the wind after what happened to them against Legia Warsaw. So you'd sort of Anthony Stokes playing on his own up front, who worked very hard, but to little avail. Charlie Nicholas on Sky before the game started was a bit bemused by the team selection. Chris Commons didn't start. And then the sort of three midfielders in behind Stokes who were all content to sort of sit back. So I thought if either team had decided to grab the first leg by the scruff of the neck and go for it, that it won it. They both made a lot of mistakes. They both could have won it. And a draw was probably a fair result. And I'm sure Celtic could be happy with it. Celtics, you just look at their team sheet. It's, you know, Charlie Mulgrew is the star turn. And, you know, Virgil van Dijk, their centre half, he could have won it for them with a header. But
that's a great name, isn't it?
Virgil it is, actually, yeah. But his header was blocked on the line by his teammate, Stefan Johansson, who also missed an absolutely golden opportunity to win it for Celtic. Hmm. But, you know, they'll be happy with 0-0. But I don't think whichever team progresses to the group stages from this match will be cannon fodder in the group stages.
All right, Paul's got a finger up.
I wanted to know your opinion of Callum McGregor.
I thought he played very well, yes. There were four standout players. Young Callum McGregor, who I must confess I'd never heard of before last night, Charlie Mulgrew in midfield, and Maribor, two excellent players as well, sort of passing midfielder called Zdenko Filipović. And
I bet that's how you say it as well.
Asim Ibrahimi up front.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cool. We're all about the Scottish football news here, so let me just tell you that ex-Arsenal ladies manager Shelley Kerr is taking charge of Lowland League club Stirling University, which makes her, that's right, the first female manager in Scottish senior football history. She won three trophies in 16 months at the Gunners. That's pretty good, isn't it? Hey, in other news, and this isn't Scottish per se, Coventry are back in Coventry.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
Did you? That's. I think that broke this morning, Thursday morning. I was just hoping someone was going to explain to me how that actually happened.
How did that actually happen? No, that's news.
Well,
news to me.
I saw the news.
The business dealings that led them to Northampton from the Ricoh Arena was just unbelievably complex and convoluted. So David Kahn, I think, was all over it.
Right.
So if you rummage around the archives, But yeah, it's great that they're back.
All right, well, David Kahn with a splendid article breaking the news that the Glazers have taken loads of money out of Man United, this just in today's paper and indeed a website. We'll talk about a little bit more about Man United and loads of other stuff, including a long-awaited Man City-Liverpool preview right after this. Man United fans wake up to dramatic news on Thursday with Paul Scholes throwing down the gauntlet, really, to the Glazers, saying, shape up, lads. We need five top-level players. He's basically written down four Real Madrid players and another one. And he said, these are the kind of people you should be bringing in, not this Marcus Rojo fellow.
What's happened to Paul Scholes? I'd never heard him speak for 20 years, and now he's everywhere.
You think he is, but I noticed that when he was on BT the other day, you could only see the back of his head. So I wonder if they've just got another ginger fellow in to say nasty things.
I saw him.
And be controversial.
He's tiny, isn't he? But I think it might have something to do with the fact he signed a lucrative contract with BT Sport to share his opinions on stuff.
Right.
But he never expressed the slightest interest in sharing his opinions throughout the course. My theory is he's either lost all his money and is broke, which seems unlikely, or else he's just bored.
I think it's the latter, isn't it? That's what happens.
He was being discreet while he was a player, but is now feels free to cut loose.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I like listening to him.
You do? Good. Okay. Right. But back to the gist of his point, and this came out the same day as David Kahn's piece, just illustrating once again how much money's been sucked out of that club by their owners.
One thing on the David Kahn piece. While I know the Glazers have sucked loads of money out of the club, they've still spent a lot on transfers, but they just seem to have bought the wrong players. Would that be a fair assessment?
I suppose you could say they have spent a fair bit of money on Fellaini and Mata last season.
Yeah, and Herrera's not cheap.
No, that's fair. But I think the point you would make is that compared to the clubs that they were competing with pre-2000, when did they come in? 2009?
Five.
Was it that long ago?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. But I think they never really bought loads of huge players, of huge signings. United,
okay,
so always buy players a little bit cheaper sometimes, and young players who would develop and get better. I mean, you know, Ronaldo was cost 12 million, didn't he? No one really knew who he was. But I don't know. They it's just been. It seems like another shambles in the making.
This transfer window,
like last summer, you know, a lot of big talk about. We could easily break the world record for any player. We're going to spend this much, and all this players are being linked with, you know, linked with Vidal, Pogba, suddenly deciding that Fabregas wasn't the player they wanted this season, wasn't the midfielder for them, and then you see him play on Monday night, and clearly he is probably the best midfielder in the league, walks straight back into being that type of player. It seems very incoherent, whatever is going on there at the moment.
That said, Vidal and Di Maria are still viable, aren't they? I mean,
yeah, but
I think Vidal's going to be moving there. And
didn't they say that there was a deadline for him to go?
Juventus?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
What they're saying is that he wants to stay, and they are super happy to keep him.
He has the trouble with the knee. But also, I mean, do you think they're going to sign Di Maria? I mean, it's quite late now,
and there's no Champions League. And possibly, when you start off with a game with a performance like they did against Swansea, although there are a lot of lucrative ways of attracting players, it just sends the wrong kind of vibe to people who are thinking of joining this.
But I mean, if you think about the hullabaloo that was going on before that game, I mean, there was so much optimism. It was unreal and inappropriate. But I think probably some position in between the two is a realistic take on Manchester United and their possibilities this season.
Right. Well, they lie 14th after all of 90 minutes of football, and they're taking on Sunderland at the Stadium of Light, Barry.
Yeah. If Robin van Persie wasn't fit, I would very much fancy Sunderland to win that on the strength of what I saw last week. But there's a suggestion he will start, and if he's on form, I'd say he'll be the difference between the two teams.
But they can be as good up front as they like if they play the way they did at the back.
Sunderland are no world beaters, as we all know, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Sunderland beat them.
Right. How does Sunderland come into it? Has the transfer window left them?
They've done all right. They've brought in Jack Rodwell and Patrick Van Aanholt, who was at fault for one of the goals scored by West Brom last weekend. I think they'll be okay this season, but you never know. You know, they're a dysfunctional club. But, you know, if Van Persie isn't playing for Manchester United, I would fairly confidently predict a Sunderland win.
Ooh. But they led early and equalised late, didn't they, on Saturday?
Yeah, Lee Cattermole scored a screamer. He doesn't get many.
And have they started with that same work rate that they had? Because, I mean, they basically just... They blitzed their way through the end of the season.
Stayed up by a miracle.
Yeah.
And you see the same ethic really at work.
Because that's what you want, isn't
they
it?
They should have had the win, though. Wasn't that the game that featured that ridiculous penalty?
Well, I think in the first half they were not playing very well and went ahead against the run of play. But the draw seems to have been a fair result. I mean, I only saw a highlights package, so it's hard to judge.
All right, then. There you go, that's Sunderland Man United. Other games of interest this weekend, well, other games in general. Spurs taking on QPR.
Yeah.
Mm.
Harry against his old team.
Yeah.
That's the interesting one for Spurs, isn't it? Because last season they really struggled after the Europa League games. And obviously tonight they're in Cyprus for their Europa League qualifier.
Yeah, Limassol, good point. Yeah.
I think they've left a lot of players at home. So, you know, but it's a bit different, but be a different side. But, you know, they did find it a little bit hard to get going, as many teams do. After those Thursday nights. And QPR have just signed Leroy Fair.
There you go.
From Norwich.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Was he any good last season?
Well, this is. I was just trying to think about this on the way in, because Harry is great at kind of getting, developing young talent and unheralded players to play well. But the thing about Leroy is he's got ability, but he very rare that we saw him play 100% in the game. And... we quite often got the impression he didn't have the right attitude for a fight. Now, our club was quite discordant last year, so that may have been the reason. But I wonder, he's going to be in a relegation battle again this year. I think it's a big challenge. And I think they've paid up to, you know, about £10 million for him.
Well, that's very exciting. Have you got a game against Ipswich this week?
Yeah, it's the Old Farm Derby.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge.
There's been trash talk and stuff ahead of it.
Has there?
Yeah.
what kind of trash talk?
Well, Mick McCarthy, you know, I think Mick McCarthy kind of described a late equaliser by Christoph Berra as kind of showing the resilience and grit that's going to put the fear up Norwich. And, and Norwich are like, we're coming for you and all that sort of stuff. It's cool.
Are you going along, Paul?
It's
at Ipswich.
It's at Ipswich, and I didn't get a ticket.
All right.
I saw Ipswich on the first day. They weren't bad.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some good McCarthy swearing that day as well in the press conference afterwards. He's always entertaining when.
Yeah. Certainly is. In Premier League news, Southampton will be hosting West Brom, a home debut perhaps for Shane Long against his own club. Swansea.
I'm doing that.
Are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Shane Long, 12 million. Bizarre.
Hmm.
Apparently he had a shocker when he came on.
Still, Ross McCormack is the gold standard, though, isn't it?
But then I read in this morning's papers that Hull, having shown their negotiating nous by getting £12 million for Shane Long, want to go and spend that £12 million on Jordan Rhodes.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
So
they've got Snodgrass out for 6 months with a broken kneecap. Ow, that sounds painful.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're playing in Europe tonight as well, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, of course they are.
They've got Stoke at home on a...
Stoke at home. Saturday, it's Villa Newcastle. Ha ha. And Swansea against Burnley. Swansea fresh from that terrific win at Man United. And on Monday night, boom, have some of that, etc. It's Man City Liverpool. The top two, Jacob, from last season coming face to face.
And they both won their first games.
They're kind of up there anyway now. Mm.
Yeah.
And reports are in Italy that Milan and Liverpool have reached an agreement regarding the sale of Mario Balotelli for €22 million. Ooh. Be amazing if he was in time to actually play against his former club.
That would be amazing. And a half Ross McCormack's.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that's how it works.
Mm.
So they could just get one and a half Rosses instead.
Yeah.
So they get rid of Suarez.
Yes.
And then they have a bit of peace and quiet and everything. Yeah.
No, it's going to be different this time,
is
Jacob.
It?
Yes, just like it always is.
He's an obviously good player.
Yeah.
But you can't really trust him, can you?
Do you think that's Brendan Rodgers' ego thinking, you know, I can tame anybody?
Right. I don't know, possibly.
But for all the headlines he generated, like, what did he actually do that was particularly bad?
I mean, kept getting sending off for going studs up challenges into people?
There is that question. The fact
I was talking more about his off-field shenanigans, such as they were.
Just in terms of the football, that there's the idea that, and it seems to be borne out by countless games, that if he's not in the mood, or if somebody puts him in the wrong mood, then he will effectively withdraw mentally from the game and physically from the game and become a bit of a liability.
He was good against England in the first game at the World Cup, and then you get everyone saying, "Oh God, this guy's future Ballon d'Or winner." And then the following two games was a load of rubbish. Really, for
remember
team,
when he signed Sturridge? Rodgers was very keen to kind of stress to the press straight away that it was the last chance for Sturridge to prove that he was the player that he thought he was.
Right.
Two seasons later, we all think that Sturridge is the player he thinks he is.
Fair point.
And I imagine 24 now, Balotelli.
Mm.
It's about time he started delivering on the reputation.
That could be the case.
I think it'd be good signing. I like him. He's a good, decent player. Maybe Rodgers would be able to bring the best out of him and keep him on an even keel.
But he's not the most, well, so far, one of the main things against Balotelli is the fact that he just doesn't run enough. He just doesn't put enough into the team. And the way that Rodgers sets his team up, he demands that all players do that. It doesn't seem the most obvious fit.
However, Chelsea last season, when they, the slip, etc., what they really struggled was they're playing against a defence that was set up to just counter that pace and that movement and just stay solid. They didn't have any physical presence, anybody who could boss that middle area around the box. And that's surely what Balotelli can do. He can create space in small areas. He can physically challenge any centre-half.
Mm.
It's a mental thing with him, isn't it, really? Because there are games when he does look unstoppable and then games when he looks like the worst player in the world. You kind of worry when you look at the managers who have had him and not been able to get anything out of him. Mourinho was completely exasperated with him, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting. And it's a very eye-catching move, and I think everyone will be very curious to see how that's going to work, and if he can get on the field, which is probably unlikely in this game Monday night against Man City away. Man City, a 2-0 win away at Newcastle in the opening game.
Yeah, I mean, it was swings and roundabouts in the game. Newcastle had periods of pressure, but just David Silva was the difference. He was just a level above everybody else.
The big fella. The big lad up front, Edin Dzeko.
Yeah, that was a lovely little flick. This was a great game last season when they played in December.
2-1 to City. 2-1.
Liverpool went 1-0 up through either Coutinho or Sterling, I can't remember now. But they were brilliant for about 20 or 25 minutes. I think afterwards City players were going, "Oh God, these guys are actually the real deal." Mm. But City ended up punishing... Without playing that well.
Wasn't there a huge refereeing call?
That Pacino was Lee Mason when Rodgers made the silly comments about not wanting a Manchester-based referee.
And a Mignolet mistake.
And a massive
miss from Sterling as well from about six yards out.
That was a brilliant game. And, that Liverpool exposed them with the pace in that game. I wonder if is Mangala ready yet to play?
I don't know.
But that was a brilliant game last season, so hopefully it will be similar on Monday night.
I wonder if the texts will start being exchanged, now maybe ahead of that game with all the preparation they like to do on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I bet they are. I bet they are. We've certainly already started exchanging texts for another channel's Sunday night show, which you're very welcome to come and see, as I say, the behind the scenes for. We're going to be debuting a bit of Portuguese action, Barry.
I think Baz is just a little bit offended you've never turned him into the new James Horncastle.
He's been on other channels output.
Yeah.
But you were going to ask, I think, Barry, who we're showing.
Oh, yeah, sorry, are you showing?
Yeah, absolutely. We're on the air at 6:30, so we'll have time to round up all the goals from around Portugal and France and Germany the opening weekend. Before...
Who's your Portuguese specialist?
We're going to have Andy Brassel in.
Very nice man.
He is a nice man, and very knowledgeable too. So he'll stick out like a sore thumb. And then at 7:30, we'll have... Boavista against Benfica. Hang on, aren't Boavista down in the third division on account of their golden whistles scandal business relegation?
They're really going to struggle with this one.
Yeah, they got allowed back up for a technicality. So they're back in the big time and taking on the champions Benfica. So
everyone's fifth favourite European league, the Portuguese league.
Exactly so. Yep. Ben says we've got to go. We've got to go, listeners. Got to go. I hope that we've been of some help.
There's one word for it.
Yeah. I hope that we've whiled away an hour or whatever it's been for you. And if you liked it, you can always join us again on Monday when we'll be back with our review of all the exciting stuff that happens this weekend. In the meantime, many thanks, Barry. Nice to see you back. Paul there for your travels, and also Jacob,
yep,
and you producer Ben, and have a great weekend all. Bye for now.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.